This episode of the Hard Drive DL is brought to you by our friends at Napa Auto Parts. Conquer the job with Napa know-how.
You're listening to Hard Drive DL, available at harddriveradio.com or download the Hard Drive Radio mobile app.
Paulie Walnuts in the Hard Drive Radio studios, joined now by Johnny, Mark, Dan, and Ben. Nothing more. Guys, it's great to have you back. Thanks for coming up.
Yeah. It's good to be back.
Man, I think we were here about 3 months ago. And I grilled you pretty hard about the new album, and now it's like, we're 4 days away. This is it. This is the moment. Everybody gets to hear it. So, I mean, it's got to feel amazing. You know, you guys have been playing these songs, you know, in your live sets, a couple of the songs in the live sets now, but to be able to have the album out there and have everyone hearing it, I mean, what's your feeling about it?
I kind of forgot it was happening, you know? It's like...
Yeah, it's like Friday, what? Like
this Friday? Yeah. You just kind of, we finished the record a long time ago, you know, and so it's, we do a lot of prep work once it's done. So you kind of forget, oh yeah, people haven't heard this thing yet. But no, we're beyond excited to get it out there finally and, you know, let it be, let it grow.
I just, like, how do you tell, how are we supposed to know if people like it or not, though? That's what I'm still trying to wrap my head around.
You just look at YouTube comments, which are usually very offensive and honest, you know.
When it shows up on Tinder, they swipe,
Can we make a profile for our
That'd
record?
Be awesome.
See how many dates it gets?
Get some dates.
Oh, this is a good idea.
I was at the show last night, and you know, you guys were in top form. It was absolutely electric, and it's got to be a good way to kind of get back into it because you're kicking off a tour now. So tell me about the show last night. I think you said, you know, about the crowd. It's a different kind of crowd than what you guys normally have at a show, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of going back to our roots a bit and playing kind of that dirty, small rock club, you know, Brooklyn. You know, it was the perfect environment for like a really dirty, sweaty rock show that's really up close and in your face. And I love those kind of shows, honestly, but they're also a bit of a challenge technically with when it comes to the PA system and the amount of room you have on stage. It's kind of difficult for us to really do our thing like we do on a bigger stage, but it really was like going back a few years and just jamming out and just letting it all be there and a really good intimate rock show with everyone.
Do you think you prefer playing a big room or a smaller room these days?
They both have their advantages, really. Festivals are awesome because it's an endless sea of people and you see them all moving as one. And then just like Johnny said, the smaller, sweaty rock show is a thing, you know, it's punk rock. It feels awesome.
I like the smallest show possible with the biggest PA possible and the biggest amount of stage space. So whatever that happy medium is, because the smaller you get, you can see people's faces, you can feel their energy, they can feel your energy beyond just like seeing somebody in the distance. You know, it's just very different when you really see somebody's face and their body move.
Yeah. We do some festivals and it's like the barricade is like 30 feet away. It's super far away. I'm like, I'm going to go talk to the crowd, and it's like, man, that's going to take me like a minute to climb down this and go over there. And
but, you know, we when we played Rocklahoma, that was probably the coolest thing because the crowd started chanting, no more Jackal, more Jackal.
Yeah, we went on after Jackal.
Well, Jackal.
On a different day.
And they had gone over their set by like 30 minutes.
Yeah, Jackal just kept playing.
Ridiculous.
They went into a guitar solo with his mouth.
Star Spangled Banner.
Just
screaming into the pickups. Yeah, but we're all waiting for the chainsaw solo, though. It's like, all right, don't boo him off yet. You know, we got to see this chainsaw solo. Yeah. But after that, yeah, got a little ridiculous. Yeah.
Everyone saw it?
Yeah.
I was actually flashing back last night to the first time I saw you guys, which was in the studio room at Webster Hall, that tiny little basement room. Mm. God, I don't know how many years ago that was now. That was, you know, when the last album came out. And just, I remember being so blown away by your performance. And last night, I think it was just the same kind of thing. You know, you guys have a lot of energy. You're one of the best live acts out there. And to be able to contain that in such a tiny room, for anybody, I'm telling you, anybody listening to this who can get to a small show with nothing more, I mean, bring protection because you're going to have a good time.
Well, thanks, man. Yeah.
After the show?
Yeah, you will.
Yeah,
get
which kind of protection are we talking? Just a body condom.
Safety glasses.
Oh, yeah.
I actually, you know, funny because watching the crowd last night, it seemed like half the people in there just already knew all the words to your songs. The album's not out yet, And yet people, like, almost know all the songs.
Thieves.
Yeah, right? Who leaked it?
It's the Russians.
No, it
some
is,
damn
it
pirates.
Is really cool, just like you're saying. It's we've only played Ripping Me Apart live. And now, like, those verses are just guitar and vocals. And hearing everyone or seeing their mouths move to every single word, it's like, wow, did you just watch YouTube, like, over and over and over again to learn them all? Yeah, it's incredible.
See,
it's an honor.
Last night, they definitely did know the lyrics, and that was pretty surprising. But there are a lot of shows when people don't know the lyrics, but they pretend like they do, and that's the funniest. When you're, like, singing, and you see this person, like, you're like, my focus will go on them at the moment. And I don't know if they feel pressure to sing or they're just were singing, but they don't know this next part. But they keep moving their mouth, and it's like, you are not saying the words at all. I don't know what you're doing. You're just kind of...
Yeah, it's like Godzilla overdubs.
Yeah, it's really funny.
You know, I've been guilty of doing that, and I always wondered, like,
can they notice? It's you.
Can they tell?
You
know, I guess that's
I can tell.
We're not fooling
tell.
Anyone.
No. Right. I did that, too, as a kid. I remember I was, like, 12, and this band I loved, like, he put the microphone in my face, and I was just like, oh, God. I had felt so much pressure, and I just went, blah, 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 just mumbled something, and hoped that he thought I knew what I was doing, but. He knew.
What band was that, by the way? Was that Spoken?
Spoken, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I remember that show.
Yeah.
It's funny, and it was really interesting.
Got really embarrassed.
2 years ago, we played a festival, and I remember him coming up to you and talking to you about how much he loved our band.
Yeah, that was a weird circle of life kind of thing.
Yeah, pretty neat.
So what you need to do is put the mic in his face.
I should have. In catering. How do you like it?
How do you like it? Mr. Speaking.
One of the things that I've always loved about you guys is, you know, you use some samples in your music, but it seems like, especially Ben, like a lot of it you're doing live. Like I see you hitting these pads that you've got.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. How much of it is, you know, stuff that's already tracked, and how much of it is just you doing it live?
It's kind of half and half, depending on what it is. I try to make it. It's something I've kind of recently integrated with the whole Roland setup, but. I wanted to try to perform as much stuff as possible. So anytime I wasn't actually playing, you know, a beat on the kit, I want to be playing whatever else is going on there, percussively speaking. So there'll be like an 808 drop here and there. Sometimes I'll trigger with my foot. But I was able to get, like, for Don't Stop, that whole intro part, like, take all those sounds and spread it across the kit. So it's like, oh, I'm going to play this because it's fun.
It's good. Yeah, it's good to see it.
Yeah. And there's something fun about, like, I don't know, especially that part in particular. It's so low-endy. And every time I hit that, I know I'm just shaking the guts of... everyone out there, it's like, oh yeah, this is fun.
I was
brown notes for everyone.
Power. Yes.
Dude, seriously, I took my wife to the show last night, and she had never seen you guys live before, so I was going on and on about the Bassinator, and so, like, you're hitting those low notes, and she's like, is that the Bassinator? Is that what? I'm like, no, that's it's something completely different, but yes. I see why you would think that.
Yeah. I don't feel good. Is this normal?
Yes. Looking through the liner notes for this album, I mean, this is a really team effort for you guys. You know, there's a lot of people that were kind of part of making this album, and that's not any kind of criticism, you know, because I feel like it's definitely some of your best work. Tell me a little bit about working with Clint Lowry, because he did some guitars, and I think you guys also recorded some stuff with him as well in his studio, right?
Yeah, definitely. He plays on Funny Little Creatures and the song Tunnels. And growing up, we're all big Seven Dust fans, and being a guitar player, he's definitely an inspiration of mine. So it was pretty ridiculous to have him in the same room with us and just jamming and a part of the band. So it was really, really cool.
Mark and Daniel, was there any kind of like techniques or something you were like watching him play and maybe like picked up a new trick or anything like that?
I can't hold it. When it comes to lead, that's for sure.
Yeah. No, he's an awesome player. I thought, you know, when we were going to work with him, it was going to be way more like that choppy Seven Dust thing. And I guess he's not the guy in the band that does that. He's more of the, like, melody overall songwriter guy. So that was cool. I don't know.
Yeah, because we didn't want to write a song that sounded like Seven Dust by any means. But he was... you know, we have mad respect for all the guys in Seven Dust. They each bring a really incredible element, each in their own right. But when he left that band, I think it was a record or two records had passed without him. And there was what was noticeably different about the writing we could really kind of pinpoint on Clint's influence in the band. And that's when we were like, you know, that particular sound or influence was something that we felt would mesh real well with what we were doing and creating. So he was actually, this is a fun little fun fact, but he was the first person really in the industry in general to hear the self-titled record. Because before we were signed, before anybody had heard that record, before it was even done, I had a buddy of mine, a guy named Mikey, and I produced his band at that time to make some money on the side while I was working on the self-titled record in my room. And I said, hey, man, I know you know Clint from Seven Dust because your mom is friends with his mom or something like that, something random. And I was like, would you mind when you give him the stuff we're producing together also throwing in a Nothing More song in that email? He's like, sure, man, yeah, whatever. So he throws in, I think it was This Is the Time or Ballast at the Time. The Matthew Effect, I think, was the first one he heard. And he got back to us and he's like, you know what? He's like, I get emails all the time with songs and I'm always either disappointed or I don't have time to listen to them or whatever. And he was super excited about it. Now, this was maybe 5 years ago, 4 years ago. Yeah. It was a while. Wow. And so ever since then, we talked about working together, but never, you know, just never had the time. And our careers started taking off. And so this record, we finally got to say, you know what, let's make it happen. And so we did.
You know, I wonder how our friend Mikey felt, though. I never thought about this, that Clint then picked our band to take out on the road, like when we were unsigned, and he had not had his.
Well, Mikey's band broke up, so.
Oh, that's right.
Fortunately, it worked out. So,
yeah.
Sorry, Mikey. Love you, dude.
Love you. I should have said that.
Johnny, you produced this album, but you also share a production credit with your manager, Will. In the liner notes I read, is it normal to have your manager as part of, you know, your production team for your album?
It's not normal as far as I know, but we actually met Will on the Few Not Fleeting record, which was the first record that I sang on. And that's when we started looking for drummers. And basically, we only had enough money at that time to work with, you know, producers on a few songs. So we did three songs with him. At the time, he was producing Daniel's brother's band called Sounds Under Radio. And he did such a bang-up job that we were like, let's get that guy. It sounds really good. And then we did a production with another guy locally. And the rest of the record, I think it was like six or seven more songs that we just did on our own. I had a little bit of a college fund that my grandmother had set up when I was a kid. And I found a loophole in the system and just put all that money into studio gear by writing it off as class, you know, needed material. you know, so I exploited the loophole and, you know, didn't go to college, just put it into studio gear, started working on the record with the guys. And then from there, that evolved into a partnership with Will, who turned out to be our manager. He asked us at a Taco Cabana one day, you know, if he could manage our band. And over, you know, $2 tacos, we said, sure thing. And
yeah, that was our first time to get wined and dined. Right there.
Except he didn't buy them. I think we've all bought our own tacos.
Yeah.
Maybe he did. I don't know. Will's over there. Did you buy the tacos? Oh, he's shaking his head. Yes. I don't think he did, but no, maybe he did. Sorry, Will. So ever since then, we've been producing together. And, you know, Will and I are the main production heads in regards to the album as a whole. But we really do, as a band, it's a fully operating machine. You know, Mark and Ben are working in what we call Studio B, which is kind of the rehearsal room house. There's a little studio that Ben had set up, and Mark and him would do guitars and background vocals, and Dan would be outside in the garage building stuff, and then I'd be at, you know, my studio, and then Will would be at his studio in Austin. So we were constantly bouncing things into this little whirlpool of work that we had.
There are a couple of tracks on the album with some spoken word pieces in there. Whose voice is that?
A guy named Alan Watts. He was on the self-titled record as well, and he was a philosopher that was doing most of his stuff back in the 60s, I believe. But he was one of those guys that was just way ahead of his time and not very well known or not very mainstream or popular, but just one of these hidden gems that I came across years ago and just going down the YouTube rabbit trails. And when I'd go either work out or be laying down in bed at night or just kind of killing time on the road, I would find myself going back to his stuff. And at that time, I was transitioning from having grown up in a pretty religious home, which we've all kind of come from that background, to a more secularized kind of open-mindedness. And that in that transition, Alan Watts was somebody who was kind of someone who just kind of entered my life at the right time and really opened my mind to new ways of thinking about the world and existence and all those kinds of things. So he's really had an influence on the music and also, like you said, made his way onto the record.
It's funny. I was hoping that you'd have a good story about that, discovering him, because, you know, you said going down the YouTube rabbit hole, I was looking at the liner notes and I saw, you know, he was credited there. And I was like, oh, that's who that is. Let me ask you about him. And then I was like, I don't know anything about this guy. Let me look him up. And sure enough, like YouTube videos, I'm sitting there and I'm watching his old lectures and everything. I was like, I could get lost in this stuff. It's really fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. If you have the, I think most people nowadays lack the patience to really appreciate some things, myself included. But for whatever reason with him, like I can let myself go deep and I don't get too ADD about it. But yeah, if you let yourself get deep with him, man, your mind will do a lot of little aha moments and like, whoa, I never thought about it like that before. You know,
how much of his stuff have you listened to, and how much do you kind of like sort through? Do you, when you're putting these tracks in the records, do you already know the quotes that you want to put in, or does it just kind of like come to you through the writing process?
Well, a lot of it was like, you know, when we're on tour, we lay down in these bunks that are kind of like these little coffins. You know, it's pitch black, really cold, and you're just, you know, in this little cocoon while you're flying down the highway. And when I'm going to sleep at night, I'll put my headphones in and a lot of times listen to Alan Watts or a variety of different things, and he'll have these 2-hour lectures, and you know, I'll kind of be in and out of sleep, but there'll be these moments where just like something pops out at me and I'll kind of wake myself up and email myself and go, here at, you know, 1 hour and 15 minutes, you know, check this excerpt out. And so over months of doing that, kind of went back through all my notes and compiled the things that really stuck out and really related to the record. Because there's hours of stuff that I've put together from his or even, you know, compiled. But it just really ended up getting weeded down to what related most to the record and the thoughts behind the songs.
I want to go off on a tangent here and kind of pick up on something you mentioned. What do you guys like to listen to when you're on the road? Like, you're laying in your bunk at night. Do you listen to music? Do you just, like, not listen to anything? What keeps you entertained for all those miles?
I know I, most of the time, every tour, the album I fall asleep to changes. And I end up, like, just really diving deep into this one record, this tour, for whatever reason. It's called Similarities by Biffy Clyro, and yeah, killer record. And I don't know, and then my body gets used to that as a habit of like, okay, this is the song I listen to fall asleep. And it's a good zen thing to do for me, because a lot of the times, you know, if you're, especially on days off, if your body's not super wrecked and tired from a show, you can't fall asleep. Or it's like I without having a few drinks too or whatever. So that those two things kind of go hand in hand with me as far as like what music we listen to. That's the time that I end up listening to music, just fall asleep.
Yeah, I've gotten real into this podcast by this guy Dan Carlin. He has this podcast called Hardcore History, and man, it's every time I say that to somebody, they're like, that sounds kind of stupid. It's really incredible stuff. Just the way he can explain and kind of detail out certain events of history in such a, I don't know, he really paints the picture quite well for you, and it's plenty of material. So like one series will be like 20 hours long, you know, 6 podcasts that are each like 4.5 hours long or something like that. So it's plenty of time to kill. I don't know, it's pretty fascinating.
I was never into history, but I started listening to Dan Carlin, mm-hmm. and it's amazing.
Yeah, it's, if you,
you don't have to be into history to like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope one day you get to randomly talk to a guy and you just recognize his voice, because you probably don't know what he looks like. You're like, Dan Carlin?
Oh, dude, I would be.
He's like, yes.
I would be so excited.
I have a bad habit of watching UFC fights before I go to bed.
I get pumped up.
It's the opposite, like, you know, chemical, you know, injection in my brain that I need, because I'll just start getting all like, you know, anxious and like riled up. But yeah. I don't know why. I just like I'm drawn to looking up fights before I go to bed. So my dreams are very intense.
Yeah. And I'm on tour. I really can't listen to music. Something about, I just have like a, what's the word? Like a threshold, I guess. Like, for instance, like when we're jamming or riding, when I drive to the band house, I'll listen to podcasts or music. But on the way home, it's always just dead silence. Like
yeah.
Windows up, you know, just nothing kind of thing. Yeah. And if I can't fall asleep in my bunk, I usually watch airplane crashing videos for some reason. That always does it. or demolition fails. That's another one.
Just watching buildings explode instead of implode.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they don't fall right, you know, and they fall in the church next to them. The guy's truck.
So, yeah, what are you telling yourself when you watch these videos?
It's just like the end of my day, I guess. I don't know. It's like, well, yeah. It didn't go perfect today, Dan, but, you know, nobody died.
You are dark. I love that. So you guys are hitting the road again. I feel like this is leg two of the earlier tour this year because you're going on the road again with the same, you know, the same bands. So that's,
yeah, it's kind of funny.
It's good. I mean, obviously you had a good time with them. Bring them out again. Yeah. I remember at the end though, there were some pretty good pranks at the end of that tour. Are you guys worried?
Always, you know, we sleep with one eye open, especially with Hell or High Water being on the road again. Don't know what they're going to do. But As Lions was going to be on tour with us, and they were the band that we really punked the hardest. We wrapped their van, like, really good with a bunch of junk and saran wrap. And
saran wrap, yeah.
It was really wrapped. Like, I felt bad after it. Not really, but a little bit. And, yeah, so they were the ones I was most worried about, but they dropped off the tour, so... That's, you know, kind of a blessing in disguise, I think. I can sleep well.
Yeah, this tour also, we have a rotating lineup every day. Like, it's not the same, you know, first to four, second to four main support. The bands switch every show. So that'll be fun. I don't know. I think if I was an opening band, I would have way preferred that on a tour than, you know, playing before the doors open every night.
Yeah.
So. It's good to mix it up. That's good.
Yeah. It'll be fun to see.
Absolutely. You guys are hitting some pretty good festivals along the way this year, too. I think you're hitting Aftershock. You're doing Sonic Boom in Wisconsin. The guys in JJO, we love them. Any ones that you're particularly looking forward to?
This is our first time doing Riot Fest in Chicago. It's a different type of festival. I know Queens of the Stone Age and Nine Inch Nails and Depeche Mode are all playing different kind of bands that we don't normally get to play with. So from a fan aspect, it's awesome to be able to see that, as well as being introduced to, you know, people that might not normally listen to our music. So I know we're all really pumped about that.
Yeah.
After this tour wraps, what's the next thing for you?
We're going to have a short break, maybe a week and a half, and then we're heading to Europe. So that's going to be exciting. Europe's always an adventure. Then from Europe, you know, we're going to come home for Christmas and then go to a boat. We're going to play on a boat.
Yeah.
We're going to be on a boat with a bunch of drunk, rock-loving hooligans. It's called Shiprocked.
Yeah, Ship-Faced.
I mean, Ship-Faced.
There's a P in there. There's a P in there.
I should talk to their marketing department. That's a good idea. Yeah, so we're doing Shiprocked, and then from there we're going to do another U.S. tour and try to hit up some of the places we didn't get to on this tour, one of which is New Orleans, because we had to cancel that show on this tour. Actually, we didn't cancel it, but it got canceled on us, and so we had to reschedule the venue. It's a long story, but they double-booked it, and yeah, we were pretty bummed out about it. So that's our first priority on the next tour is New Orleans, and then after that,
Houston,
I don't know what we're doing. Too.
We're really trying to finagle our way back to Japan and Australia, though.
Yes.
So that's the end game here.
Yeah, maybe
so,
India,
so if
too.
You know anybody. Yeah, yeah, India.
Middle East, that'd be cool.
Rock Vietnam.
India is a cool place that I feel like, you know, not a lot of rock bands get to. But I remember watching a tour DVD from Parkway Drive, and they went out there to India, and, like, just watching the fans... Huh. Like, how excited they were to have their band there. It's just, like, over the top. You know, these people, they want to see these guys play. And I guess not enough bands are able to get out there. So
yeah.
It's interesting you say that because, right, them being from Australia, I know Carnival has gone over there as well, and so they already have this like Australian Indian connection or something that's happening. Hopefully we can make that connection and get over there as well.
Well, I imagine the flight is shorter than from the U.S.
That is accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think their India is like our Alaska. Yeah. It's close, kind of, but, you know.
Have you guys played Alaska?
We almost got to, like, 3 weeks ago or something like that, and it right at the last moment, it fell through, and hell yeah, it took our spot. Damn. Ah, but they're cool guys.
No, they're great guys.
Hell no.
Hell no.
Hell no.
Hell no. No, we love those guys.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they stole Alaska from us, so we're a little jealous.
Wanted to see the tundra.
Yeah, tundra.
I've only been to Alaska once, but it was beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Rub it in.
Where'd you go to?
We took a cruise up the coast and went to Anchorage.
Cool.
Which, and then we just kind of like hung out there for a couple days and did a bunch of wilderness stuff and went horseback riding and saw
nice
mooses and bears and all sorts of crazy shit and ate a lot of fish.
Oh, yeah.
I bet.
Had salmon jerky, which was weird but cool.
Interesting.
Yeah. Huh.
Is that when you just like leave a salmon dead in the sunshine and then
I feel like
into it?
just kind of lay it out on the road, let it bake.
You know? Yeah,
there's no cars up there, so it's not going to get run over.
Salmon roadkill. Yeah, I guess a bear left this.
No, Alaska really is beautiful though. So if I hope you guys get a chance to go up there because
never
dying. It's a magical place. So the album, it's out. I'm so excited for you guys. I can't wait for everybody to hear it because I think it's, I think it's absolutely beautiful. And there's a lot of emotion in this record, which is not, a thing that, Nothing More is a very emotional band. You guys write songs like that. And it's one of the things that I love about you. But there are a couple of songs on this one that are really just kind of a gut punch for me personally.
Mm.
And the closing track, actually, Fade In, Fade Out, is like one of those ones that's just... It's hard to listen to. I want to know, was it hard to write?
Yeah. I think, that one started from me. I remember getting the idea. I think I might have said this the last time we got together. But the melody came to me at, 2 or 3 in the morning. I was over at a friend's house with my wife, and she was pregnant. And... force myself to get up and do a little voice memo of the, I've watched you fade and you will watch me fade out. And then slowly over time sculpted that idea. And what you hear now is definitely different than my original idea, with the exception of that melody. But slowly kind of showing the guys and having this one riff in there as well. And like all of our songs, they just go through a process of cutting the fat and what's good, and I definitely trusted the guys to really make it the best that we possibly can, and I'm so honored and proud of these guys to have done
that. One was inspired a lot by Mark's son in Phoenix, and anyway, that was a deep one.
The other song I wanted to ask about, Just Say When.
Yeah, that one was basically, I went through a breakup that was, a divorce. There was an 8-year relationship, and it was a girl that I met the day my mom had passed away. So there was a lot of history and a lot of, just a lot of things that were really hard to let go of and say goodbye to, even though I knew that it was going to be for the best for both of us, which it ended up really being great. We're both in a much better place, but that one was kind of that struggle. I heard this quote once that the hardest thing to do is knowing whether to walk away or try harder, and so that's pretty much what that one was about.
It came across beautifully last night at the show. You guys kind of sit down, it's just Johnny and Mark out there on stage with your acoustic, and it's powerful stuff, which music should be, and that's one of the things I love about this band and rock and roll in particular. I feel like we don't really do a lot of popcorn, I feel like a lot of this music is real art, and I want to thank you guys just for, being great at what you do, because bands like Nothing More, we absolutely need. Everyone likes to, take kicks at rock, rock music, rock is dead, it's all, brainless, chugging, whatever, and it's like, no, you're not listening, you're not paying attention. this music is fucking great. So
thanks, man.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. The album is The Stories We Tell Ourselves. The Band Is Nothing More. It's out. Go get it!
Yeah.
Guys, thank you so much for coming in. This was awesome.
Yeah, thanks for having us again, man. Always a pleasure.
More episodes of Hard Drive DL at harddriveradio.com. Download the Hard Drive Radio mobile app and keep listening.